You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Welcome back to part two of our deep dive behind the prom curtain. Today's guests are prom book writer Bob Martin and book writer lyricist Chad Begley. Let's dive back in. Given what you said earlier about how you want to write shows that are new and exciting and make a difference, what is it like working and creating a show from scratch, from a blank page, as opposed to doing an adaptation?
Well, there's no roadmap, obviously. It's sort of, having done both, there are challenges to both, but I think it's much harder when you're looking at a blank page. But there are also tons of opportunity. But, you know, it's just sort of spitballing and, you know, going down a lot of dead ends and then realizing, oh, well, that's not going to work. You know, it's funny when I think back to some of the earlier drafts. There was one point where Emma was going to tell her story on Eddie Sharp, the talk show, but only if she kissed Alyssa at the end of it. That was and then she chickens out. So Barry tries to get Hawkins to kiss him on the show. And there was a song called Seal It With a Kiss. I mean, like, just these really dead alleys that we were like, oh, yeah, this is going to be it. This works. And then you go, oh, God, no. So, but it's, you know, it's also having a team of people that you trust who, you know, and we all went down several sort of dead ends together. But I mean, that also usually, hopefully, leads you to the right answer.
Yeah, I think the team, the trust and respect within the team is even more important when it's an original piece.
Yeah.
I mean, because with an adaptation, at least you have the tone is basically set for you. The story choices have basically been made one way or another. So you're just sort of sculpting what already exists. So, you know, you're not going to have fundamental arguments about where something is going. with our show, it was a question of collectively finding the right tone. I mean, that was the biggest battle. The
right.
Story points, well, were related to tone. So that particular choice of Barry and Hawkins kissing was, it was much more arch, much more obviously satirical. And, you know, we eventually got to a place where we started to see that there was real truth and power in the show, and then we started to root everything in the characters. So it wasn't kind of external comedy that was placed over something. It was, I mean, there are instances of that in the show, but it's mainly about these moments between these characters that became more and more real as the actors kind of embodied them.
And finding that balance as the world changes around you, you know, of comedy and heart, was fascinating to watch you guys find that balance, and it kept shifting. And even just a line meant something so different, you know, in Atlanta than it did in New York, and mm-hmm. and figuring out how to do that. Yeah, I just, sadly, I think that the original Broadway musical is becoming a very rare thing. And so it's such a incredible triumph to have brought this all the way. Also unique, I think, is that early on, you guys had certain actors in mind, and, you know, we're able to write with those actors in mind. And so later on in the process, after you had, you know, a completed draft and they came in for a table read, you know, you were able to continue shaping it around them, you know, that was a unique thing too. That doesn't happen on Broadway very often, that you're able to work with some extraordinary actors that come in, you know, at that point, and all the work you work with them as it continues to evolve. That's a very special thing too. That doesn't happen very often anymore.
Yeah. I mean, how far along were we when we first brought? It's like 4 years.
I wish Matt were here because he remembers that.
That's around 4 years.
I think four years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And these are all A-level people, and they're very respectful of the text, and they tried everything that we gave them. And, you know, you sometimes deal with people who come in and say, I'm not going to say this, or this is what I would like to say, or there was nothing like that with these guys. They were all pros, and they were, as I say, were respectful. Of course, they saw that we were also working really hard and rewriting constantly. We would work scenes with them and then take notes and you know, produce another draft the same day. Like, this is what we think where we need to go here. So we were constantly you know, nurturing the book and everything.
I have to say that, with all due respect, for example, to Beth Level, you're Dee Dee Allen, Jack.
Yes.
I just think the world needs to see it at some point, and I've been with all due respect to Beth, waiting for that moment for you to step in and assume that role, because your Dee Dee Allen is extraordinary.
Well, you know, it's been honed over years and years in my bedroom, wearing ladies' character shoes.
And in public, often.
And sometimes
around
in public.
New Year's.
Yes.
Because part of the creative process is sitting around the table, and, as you know, before the actors are involved, and hearing, so you guys could hear out loud what you got, but it's just the, you know, the team that's doing that. And, mm-hmm. you know, Bob, you are an awesome Barry, and, you know, the principal, for sure. But, yeah. you know, nobody could step into those high heel shoes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Well,
you know, I have to say.
Someday.
But speaking of Beth Level, Drowsy Chaperone, Elf, Prom, is she your muse, Bob?
I love Beth so much. I mean, she's a perfect example of someone who, you know, you give her the what's on the page, and she just does everything she can to make whatever you've given her work, even if it's terrible. and I always say about Beth that if she's working too hard, then there's something wrong with the writing. Like, she'll so in other words, she won't change it, but she'll just hammer away at it in her own way with a lot of business in order to make that laugh work or that moment work. And so, you know, part of the job of writing for her is to make her job easier, like so that she doesn't have to work as much, give her, you know, the right material. But no, she's amazing. She continually surprises and impresses me. I personally think that Prom is the best work she's ever done on stage. And she was great in The Drowsy Chaperone. I can speak, you know, to that one specifically. But she just gets to such a sweet, real place in the second act of this show, after beginning as such a broad caricature of a Broadway diva. But she just gets somewhere so real and moving, and you're just so happy for her at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite an accomplishment. I don't think many people could do that.
No, it's an amazing cast, but as brilliant as our cast is, we've seen these characters played by our wonderful understudies, mm-hmm. and the parts are written so beautifully that, you know, it works. It completely works. I mean, it's a whole different thing when Beth is in it, or, you know, Brooks. Everybody can bring their own individuality to the parts, but they're so beautifully written that I know that they'll be played forever, you know, out there in the world by so many different people. It would be exciting to see that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's another thing about when you're putting up a show, you know, you write it, and then it goes, it has this life in this building. The whole, it's like a little village that, you know, is set up to run the show. And sometimes that village is just a terrible place to go, where everybody hates each other and everything. But in the case of Prom, from what everything that I have heard, it's a really, everybody loves each other. And you know, it's a really, really nice place to be. Many shows are very toxic environments, but Prom has managed to be a really nice place to live and work.
There's so much love in that building.
Yeah.
It's so true. For both of you, what was the hardest moment creatively in the creative process? What was, like, where did you have trouble breaking through on a moment that you just felt was so important?
For me, it was the principal song. I think we wrote like 8 different versions of a song for him. And it was eventually clear that we had the wrong idea for his character entirely. Because originally he was a straight guy who everyone thought was gay because he loved musical theater. And so we wrote a song called Gay For You. We wrote a song called Starstruck. We wrote a couple other songs. We just could not figure it out.
Those were great songs.
they were.
Really great songs.
Gay For You was one of the first songs written for
the
show.
Yeah. And then we just realized this is, the whole concept is wrong. And we changed the character and then the song, I think it was the last song we wrote, but it was like, anytime Casey would say, now the principal song, which was like, I don't know. So that was definitely the big one for me.
Yeah, yeah. And that and the top of the show. The getting into the story itself was tricky for us. And we originally wrote it that it began on stage of Broadway theater. Then it began in Indiana. And a sort of preface. Then eventually it began on a step and repeat. But what we were wrestling with was, it was really an interesting exercise as a writer. Like it's a premise-driven show. These Broadway clowns decide to come and help this person in Indiana who they've never met, in a place they've never been. So we had to really we decided in the end to deal with that exposition as efficiently as we possibly could. So the whole premise of the show comes out in the first few pages, but it took a long time to get that, the mechanics of the opening to work at all. And I mean, I think that's fairly typical for Broadway shows.
Yeah.
You end up working on the opening more than any other part of the show, but this one was, I think, particularly problematic. I mean, how many opening numbers were there?
A million.
There are a lot.
And, right? But Matt just got off easy because I just had to keep rewriting the lyrics to them. We kept using the same tune. But
Broadway royalty.
Yes, Broadway. Great. It was originally Broadway royalty. And I remember when we were in Indiana and we started with Emma very briefly. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah,
it makes our show seem like this terribly serious, very depressing. I was like, oh God, we cannot start the show. I was so glad that everyone agreed, and we went back and started with comedy.
And there, at one point, there was another main character, the stage manager.
Yes.
Which was a great character.
Performed by 2 fantastic actresses, too, mm-hmm. Rachel Dratch and Harada. And it was a great character. With a great song, but we couldn't afford the real estate, in our story, for that character. And we had to cut her. That was hard.
The song that Anne sang in one of the workshops, it was called "Running the Show," and I wrote a song with Alan Menken for Jafar in Aladdin called "Running the Show." Very different songs, but now I've realized never write a song called Running the Show because it's just going to get cut. So, but it was also sort of, we loved it. She performed it like a she did a great job with the song. And then I remember after the workshop, somebody said, wait, so she gets the big final number? Because at that point we didn't have the finale. And we were like, oh, yeah, maybe it should be Emma and sort of, but those are the things you know.
And Rachel was hilarious.
Oh my
in
God,
the role
so
too.
So
every
funny.
Single time she was on stage, it was hysterical. But yeah, it just didn't work. It's similarly, Marty Moran played Hawkins for a long time and was brilliant in the role. But when we made that big shift about who Hawkins was and mainly the role he played in the mechanics of the show again, that character really had to ground us. I mean, Hawkins is really not a comic character. He's the most, we hope, the most recognizable and real sort of character in the show. That we had to go in another direction. That was kind of heartbreaking.
Very heartbreaking.
Yeah, casting is always really hard.
Mm-hmm. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And speaking of which, so beyond Broadway, we have the tour coming up, which is going to be spectacular, and prom will be everywhere. And then, you know, hopefully will be performed in every school in the world. That's always been our dream. But there's also a little film in the works.
Yes, a little one.
Little one. Do you? I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, taking this story, and since you, with Matt, will be writing the film, how you look at it on screen. You know, it's one thing to write this story on stage, and you have to rethink it, obviously, for the big screen.
Well, they're definitely more, it's sort of freeing in a way. So, you know, for example, in the show, we don't have Emma's grandmother. It's just another salary, there's not time. But, you know, in the film, you get to show her, you can show Emma's parents, you can, you know, there, you just have a sort of broader playing field.
Yeah, I mean, the structure of a piece of theater is completely different from a film structure. So, you know, the scenes are shorter, you can have more locations, possibilities. So we wrote a scene in the bus on the way down to Indiana with the Godspell kids, and we learn more about Barry's backstory. And yeah, it's been a really fun exercise for us because we've been able to expand these elements that we, you know, we just simply didn't have the time to do or the resources to do in the theater. It's also a bit scary because we're handing it over to, you know, a whole team. That's just the way it works in film and television. You just sort of, you know, it's ultimately shot and edited. It doesn't get reborn every night the way a piece of theater does. You can't adjust it after you shoot it. So at least we can't. And then there's the problem of getting a decent performance out of Meryl Streep.
It's gonna be hard.
We do like 3 weeks with her in a room, just sort of, you know, bit by bit, mimicking, you know, just do like I do, Meryl.
It's hard to explain how absurd and exciting it is to work with the greatest actress in the world in this role. I mean, you know, Beth Level is, the greatest comedian on Broadway. And then we get this opportunity to work with literally the greatest actress in the world. So, yeah, we're giddy with excitement. We were just on the phone with Netflix yesterday about it. I mean, it's all a big bonus. And, you know, I alluded earlier to that it's been a financially difficult show. So thank God that there's a movie because it's helped everybody a little bit. And it gives a life and presence to the show that which you couldn't possibly have imagined. Ryan Murphy, who's doing the whole thing, was really personally affected by the show when he saw it. He's a gay man, born in Indiana, difficult coming out, raised by his grandmother for a certain part of his adolescence, right? So he really, really identified with everything. And his passion and vision has been super inspiring. So we're really, really excited about it. And as I say, you never get a chance to create additional scenes and additional backstory the way we have with writing the film. So it's great. It's all positive.
And all the lives who've been affected already by the stage play, just, you know, the film and the international impact of it, and all the people who will, whose lives will be affected by it. It's so exciting to think about that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, final question for you. At the end of the show, spoiler alert, Emma gets her spectacular, amazing prom, all inclusive. Angie is off to do Chicago. Dee Dee and the principal have found each other, and very exciting love affair. And you know, there's so many other moments of closure, but not completely. What happens next? What is Prom the sequel?
I mean, you know, there's the other thing that happened in the show, in the life of this show, the improbable life of Prom, is that a young adult novel was written based on the show. This really talented writer, who happens to be from Indiana, wrote a fantastic adaptation of the show. And she ends her novel with a really detailed exploration of Emma's prom night. Every detail, going to the car, meeting, you know, what she picks, and it's really so satisfying to read that you know, this wonderful, perfect night that Emma has, to read about that. I wish we could have done that in a way on stage, instead of just suggested the beginning of this night, that we actually could have presented it. But you mean what happens to Emma after the prom?
Any of the characters, like, where do we go from here? What are their lives like? I'm just dying to know. You know, is Angie this big giant hit on Broadway? Beth and, you know, Dee Dee Allen and the principal, you know, get married? You know, what happens next?
I don't know. I mean, I think Barry starts a small company where he goes around and helps consult for proms. I think Dee Dee probably gets married to Tom.
Oh, that would be nice.
I think I don't know how that would. I don't know how they would work the New York, Indiana,
yeah,
back and forth.
It's this strain on the relationship in the beginning.
Yeah, so then there would be an awful divorce.
I think Trent is going to constantly battle at school board for funds for his various productions, in which he always plays a role, I'm thinking.
Yes.
He directs them, but he's always in them as well in the high school.
Featured part.
Emma and Alyssa.
I think they go to Indiana University, and they live happily ever after.
Okay, perfect. I love that. You guys are so awesome. I can't tell you how deeply I adore you both and
Same.
Admire
well,
you
thank
endlessly.
You, Dory, for everything.
You guys walk on water, and to the future. It's going to be incredible for the show and for the two of you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Deep Dive Broadway, and a giant thank you to today's incredible guests, Bob Martin and Chad Beglin. You can find us at bpn.fm/deepdivebroadway. My Insta is dory.berenstein, and that's berinstein, and check out my website, dramaticforces.com. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.